This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
Thank you, Lyle, for your thoughts and for your prayer. That emphasis on the necessity of prayer. The necessity, the absolute need, the deep and profound need that is there, I cannot be overemphasized. I'm blessed by that. And good morning to all, and it's good to be here with you again. Such an encouragement to an old teacher to see a young teacher stepping right up to the plate, so I just want you to know that's a good thing and a blessing to me. I do want to say here at the outstart that Mrs. Lehman is here this morning. She's sitting back there. Her name is Sheila. I told you yesterday that, you and I was free to say whatever I wanted to say about that. Well, now I'm not. But more importantly, and I want to say this with seriousness, I told you yesterday, she's the organizer. And that has stood me in good stead. Just want to say here, right at the outstart, to those of you who are wives here or play a supporting role, or maybe you're the husband of a teacher. I know many of you are single. I understand that. But either way here, don't forget that when you're talking about partnering with community authority, maybe take the authority piece off the end. But your first partners are those right by your side, those people who provide a supporting role, an organizing role, who cook the meals, who keep the home in order, and all that type of thing. So my hat is off to the wives of school teachers, particularly long-term school teachers. And I've said it publicly, and I'll just say it again, that if I've been successful as a teacher, or even in my public life, my public ministry, at least half of it belongs, at least 50% belongs to my wife. I don't say that just to exalt her or the women here, but I mean that. I really honestly do. You ladies can make or break a man quickly by the way you live your lives and the way you do things. And so without the frugality of my wife, without her organizational skills, without her adaptability and just the sturdy person that she is, I probably would not be here. And I'm just starting there not so much to talk about her, but as to say that don't forget those partners right by your side, whether it's a husband, a wife, a dad, a mom, a grandparent, or whoever it is, these are perhaps, not perhaps, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, they're our first resource. They're the first people to actually help us find our way through this. So, Sheila, I'm glad you're here. All right, so we've talked about the foundation and basis for authority, developing personal authority yesterday, and today focusing on partnering with community authority. And I would like to begin actually here with a passage that will seem very odd, but I think it kind of speaks to the issue that we are thinking about here this morning. Comes from Luke chapter 16, passages here on financial astuteness and wisdom. And here's how it goes. You're familiar with it. And the Lord commended the unjust steward. And you remember what he had done is he had all the creditors that owed money to his boss, he had quickly made deals with them, so to speak, that certainly got their friendship. He cut them a deal before he's out of office. Well, here it says, and the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Now, in what way? Well, look, it's fascinating what he actually says. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness. May I say partner with them. Make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. Now, I've never quite known what to do with the last phrase there. They may receive you into everlasting habitations. Not quite sure how they do that. But I do understand that first part really quite well. You can do one of two things. Notice this is the mammon of unrighteousness. We're not talking about the godly neighbor. We're not talking about grandpa. We're talking about what he calls here the mammon of unrighteousness. And he says, you make friends there. The people of this world are smarter than you are. Because what they do is they actually know how to make friends at the right places. That's the simple lesson that is being, because the time will come when you may need them. You may need to rest upon them. And we are very foolish to think that because we are Christian, we don't need the rest of the people in the world. Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. And here he says this so clearly. This passage, by the way, actually turned to me. I used to be relatively critical of rich people. Now, I want you to hear me right on this. Wealthy people's feet should be held to the fire for the warnings that the Bible just consistently throws at them. And we should not apologize to actually raise and hold their feet to the fire. I'm saying they. I guess I'm rich enough in the world's sight to maybe be among those. But we should not be foolish. The brother in my church who is wealthy is my partner. If the mammon of unrighteousness ought to be, well, so should he. And so kind of turned my heart, not away from the place of really raising serious questions about the wealth that gets thrown around in the Mennonite world. I still have questions there. I still have serious things to say, and I still struggle in my heart knowing how to reconcile it all. I really honestly do. But I do know what it says here. It makes no sense to become adversarial with them. Why do that? Why not view even the person who I'm not quite sure if they're doing it the way I think they should do it? As my partner, we are in this together. If you forget everything else I said this morning, I want you to remember that one phrase. We are in this business of educating the children in our communities together. Very, very important. I want to tell you a story. George and Pat Salzgiver are Sheila and I's neighbors. George is a Vietnam War vet. They are in their 70s. They live there beside us. We've sat on their porch on plenty of occasions and talked over things. Talked about life, talked about war, talked about the Bible, talked about various things like that. I have my cattle. I have a few steers. I have them on his land. He wants me to take care of things. He's disabled. He was hit by shrapnel in the abdomen while in Vietnam and has I don't know how many feet of plastic connecting things together there. They expected him to die at 36 or 38, something like that. He's now 72, 73. If you saw him, yes, he's disabled. Drives around in a golf cart. And I talked to him across the fence. We installed some gates so that we can easily walk over there and chat with him and so on. Well, just this summer, I'm on my side of the fence and doing some garden work, mind you. And I looked over the fence and I saw George and Pat out in the middle of their lawn. And they have Pat is trying to dig a hole. Now, Patty is 71. George is disabled. I'm not as old as I look, but I'm reasonably capable of digging holes. And I looked across the fence, and it felt awkward. Here's this man who you would expect the man to be, his wife, who is 71 years old, is digging the hole. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. So I walked through the fence. I walked over, and rather than say, here, just let me dig this hole, which is what I wanted to do, I did just a little small chat, and I said, what are you doing here? Oh, well, this is a plum tree that our son bought for George here, and he happens to like trees, and he's kind of like me. We like gardens and trees and this and that and the other thing. And so we're out here planting it, and I said, here, give me that shovel. Let me dig that hole for you. So I dug the hole. We planted the plum tree there, and I went back to my work. Fast forward here about 3 weeks, not very long ago, and my sons and my grandsons, every year we have a that's my youngest son said when he was just a child. We have a camp out, no women allowed. That's a rule of thumb there. So we're camping. and it so happened to be that we're just 5 miles away from home at this little camping episode. We're normally farther, but just due to some circumstances, that was the case. 7 o'clock in the morning. If you're my age and you sleep in a sleeping bag on the ground, well, there's a few issues involved there. But 7 o'clock, don't you know, my cell phone rings and I pick it up, and Sheila says in a very hushed tone, but a very serious tone, Melvin, the cows are out. They're in George's lawn. I said under my breath, I'm having a bad day. I jumped out of there, got my son-in-law, and we tore up the road to find three ladies out in the yard waving sticks and doing things and not really quite sure how you chase cows. It had just rained a lot. Things are soft. It's a bad day. So anyway, shorten the story up a little bit. We get the gate open. We get the cows back in. There are cow pals everywhere. There are marks all over the yard. And I looked. The tree that we had planted is devastated. Broken off. This is a son's gift. And I knew. I just knew. Whoa. You know what I did? I walked up to Pat. Things were kind of cleaned up. The gates were shut. And I said, Pat, I said, how much did that thing cost? $24. I quickly pulled out my wallet, and I pulled out $60. And I said, here, go tell George that when you plant plum trees, because he wasn't there. Remember, he's disabled. I tell him that when you plant plum trees, you need two trees because they don't really work well, just a tree alone. And here's enough money for two trees. And if you need more, if they cost more than that, just call me. Or just let me know. I'll come over and check. Make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness. It was like, okay, it's $60. I want my neighbor as a friend. I want him as a partner. I want him as a person that I can count on. I want him to know that I'll go out of my way to actually culture that relationship. I don't agree with war. There are many things about what George and Pat do that I would not do. But the truth of the matter is they're my neighbors. And I care about them. So just a few days ago, then I was down there just before Teachers Week. I'm digging a fence post hole and I'm putting in a post and a gate. Now you need to know George. George is a Vietnam War vet. I don't know that he knows any Vietnamese, but he knows a little French, if you know what I mean. And I promise you, when those cows were in the yard, he was using some French. So I've been around him enough to know that. He came down there on his golf cart, and there I am putting this thing up. And I said, what you doing, Melvin? I said, well, I'm putting this gate in right here. We had kind of agreed earlier that we wouldn't get too permanent with gates, with fences and all that, because when this partnership dissolved, well, we'd have to take fence down or whatever. I said, George, I just tell you what, I don't know, I'm not sure if you're going to kick me out of here or not, but I just decided I'm going to put this post in and this gate in here, and if you kick me out, I'm letting it here, it'll just be yours. He laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. He said, me kick you out? You got to be kidding. All right, a relationship. But are you hearing the investments that are put into that? Not just by me, but by him, by Sheila in her discussions with Patty. Relationships don't just happen. Partnerships do not just happen. They're cultured. They're carefully tended to. Sometimes they call for $60 on the spot. Okay? Sometimes they call for an apology. Sometimes they call, yes, maybe for a rebuke. Maybe just to say we don't do things that way. But they call for energy. Energy. So what's on the floor here this morning, partnering with community authority is not an easy thing. It takes energy. More energy, more thought, more investment than most of us have time to give. But we have to give it anyway. And I should say, giving it gladly. You know what? I just want to tell you, I'm not trying to manipulate George. I like George. George has something to offer to me. He doesn't go to my church. He is a Vietnam War vet. In fact, he doesn't go to church at all. I told you he speaks French, but he's my neighbor. And I care about him. So I'm not culturing the relationship, at least I hope not, just for some gain. I just like George. So partnering with community authority, I just want to begin by saying relationships are tough to culture and to maintain, but they're well worth it from every respect. All right, what are we talking about? Well, here's a teacher. Try to find one at a pose at, I don't know if he's jubilant. I don't know if he's saying help or what he's doing, but there he is. And he's surrounded by a cast. So, school principal, here we go. We've got a list of authorities we're going to surround our school teacher with. Community authorities. There's a school board. Likely. Maybe not always. There's public school leadership. Do you realize that that's an authority that at least in Pennsylvania, you have to pay attention to and so on? I can tell you right now, it's not wise to develop an adversarial relationship with them. Much better to have a partnership relationship there. There is the legal political authority. And we'll talk about that one a bit. There's the local fellowship of believers in whatever authority structure that happens to be there. But even if there isn't one, I consider myself responsible to my local community. There's wildlife enforcement. I thought I'd put one in here just for the fun of it. If you live in northwestern Pennsylvania, this counts. Why? Everybody hunts around here. I mean, down here at the beach, I was just astounded. My sister's never hunted. My wife grew up in a hunting family. She has seven brothers. She didn't hunt. But while I hear the local Beachy Fellowship Church, those girls hunt. So do the guys. Well, what kind of attitude bleeds through from the teacher about the rules and the regulations and so forth that actually surround that? So I just pitched this one in here for fun. Certainly not going to talk about it long, but it's one that sticks there. Maybe I put it in here just to show you, look, this is probably more widespread than what you think. When you think about the supporting cast, parental authority. I didn't bring it up there last because it's least important. And I'm sure you could think of others that ought to be in this list. I want you to notice my title here is Partner or Adversary. didn't look at them. Partners or adversaries, what are they? I'm going to act, I can't focus on all of these. I'm not going to try to. I'm actually going to focus primarily on parental authority and on the legal political authority because this one has become more important as time has gone along. You might associate it with the public school leadership as well. By making that the focus this morning, I am not disregarding school boards, school principals, and local fellowship of believers. My assumption is that we have a pretty solid understanding of what ought to happen there, for sure. If we need some help, well, I don't know. We'll work on it another time. So I'm not going to focus there, but I recognize that they are a part of the cast. And my question is partner or adversary. You know, Jesus said something very interesting in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, well, look, if somebody takes you to law, go out of your way to settle the issue with him. Agree with your adversary quickly whilst you are in the way, lest he turn you over to the law. Paraphrasing there just a little bit. So, all of these, but particularly if you're looking at the four beginning there at about 11 o'clock and coming around to 4 o'clock, you can see that the parental, school board, school principal, local fellowship of believers, those are the ones who are the closest to you. I'll say a little bit more about them in a few minutes. The ones here on the left-hand side, beginning there about 6 o'clock and up around to about 9, public school leadership, wildlife, and legal political authority, they get a little farther distant, but they're important. And the proximity has gotten closer. And I'll explain why here in just a few moments. Partnering rules. Number one, culture relationships across chain of command boundaries. If I went back to the previous slide, you know, I emphasized to you earlier in some of the sessions the chain of command idea, the flow chart, the authority chart that helps us to navigate where we belong and who we're responsible to and so on. Well, if you look at that list that I just gave to you, that circle around the teacher, well, they each have their own internal structures, but there's no connection. So between the local school district and your school board, where's the flow chart? Well, there isn't any. So the way you connect those circles going around that teacher is via relationship. And that's why, because you can't connect it in a chain of command way. He's responsible to he, so they, at least not generally, you wouldn't look at it that way. So your alternative is to culture the relationship. And this is why I would be saying, for example, just like a culture to relationship with George, well, if you're a principal, culture a relationship with the local school district, just as an example. Yeah, okay, yeah, you didn't hear me say put too much time and energy there, but do take the time to call the principal of that school and just to let him know that you're there, and I know that you need a roster from me each year. I know that maybe a list of things that you know, and I'm just calling to find out if there's anything else that you would like from us that we're not actually doing presently. That goes miles. That goes miles in just letting that person know we're not up here trying to do our thing and not recognizing what you're doing. Oh, incidentally, sometimes I think that we are a little too tough on the public schools. Now, let me be clear on this. I have no intention of encouraging my children or grandchildren or anybody to go off to the public school. That's not my point. But they have a role in our society. Do you want all those children in your classroom? Well, if you don't, then I have a question for you. Who is going to actually take them under their wing and put them in your classroom? Listen, my hat's off to some of those and many of those public school teachers who put up with way more than what you put up with. Okay, so I just caution us about being so critical of the public school. I have plenty of criticism, believe me. but they have a role. And the role that they, and oh, incidentally, don't they take care of a lot of our disabled children? And with special handicaps and so forth and so on. Listen, we're wise to recognize that at least at a critical level, they're partners. They are not adversaries. And be careful about letting it get crowded over into an adversarial mindset and way of looking at things. It's just not a good idea. Culture the relationship rather than doing that. Secondly, prioritize time and energy across the spectrum of authority structures. Now, touched on that just a bit. So while I just got done emphasizing a bit, we'll take the time to actually cultural relationship with the public school system. That's not where your primary energy should go, of course. But you need to give some energy to it. In fact, at least in Pennsylvania here, we have a Secretary of Education down in Harrisburg, and I happen to know that Gerald Miller on occasion is in contact and talking with him about this, that, and the other thing. What's a good thing? I actually encourage it, but not primary time and energy, but some. Much of life is really governed by the nuances of how we prioritize things. And this is the one here I'm just suggesting to you. Obviously, if you have the mental picture of that, of the teacher and the surrounding cast, those four on the right-hand side demand top priority. Parents, school board, local community, and so on. And obviously, you should be dumping way more energy there than some of the other ones that we're talking about. Third, avoid getting caught in the web of complex authority structures. I just had a recent experience at the local hospital here in the emergency room. My wife and I did. So the bills start coming in, and you want to talk to some people about a few things. And so now, what am I paying for? It's my question. It's not that I won't pay my bills. I just would love to know what I'm actually paying for. Okay? But here's what drives me up a tree. The complexity of the structure. You can get caught in the web of that thing, and you can't ever quite get to the person that you really need to talk to. Now, I have happened to learn that if you get on the phone and you start, I say, well, who's your boss? If they say, well, I can't, well, who's your boss? Just give me that telephone number. And if that person says, well, I can't, who's your boss? Okay. I mean, the question is, who in the world can make a decision about this? But I do know that once you get caught in the web of all this stuff, it's like, man, it's really complex. And so the one that I'm going to talk about here in a bit can really be complex. But watch this one, because you can put a lot of time and energy into the complexity of authority structures. And you ever try to do anything with the IRS? I mean, they wanted to give me money one time, which I was quite sure didn't belong to me. It took me forever to convince them that check was not for me. We finally got it done, but... And already stated, and I underscore another time, avoid adversarial relationships like the plague. Okay, all they do is consume energy. Listen, I can have the best day in the world. Out of that day, 95% of it, a wonderful day. And if I have an adversarial relationship, what happens when your head hits the pillow and you're just about ready to, you want to get to sleep? That little 5% or 1% or 0.5%, wherever that adversarial relationship is, that one comes right up. At least it does in my head. All right, there it is. It's right in the front. Look, I don't have time and energy to spend there. Do what Jesus said. Get right out of bed if you have to, and get on the phone or write an email or whatever, and agree with your adversary quickly while you're in the way. Get that one past you. Could tell a couple stories here, but better let that alone. For the sake of time, avoid adversarial relationships like the plague. Incidentally, face-to-face relationships are better. They're the best. I'm not going to get into the arguments about using the media and all of that. I don't care how you cut it, face-to-face is best. Early on when I was administrating here at FB, we had a lawsuit against us in relationship to our sewer plant and some violations from a number of years back and all that. So they wanted to sue us. Who wanted to sue us? Well, it was a lawyer from Philadelphia who was representing an advocacy group. You know what I did? I worked tirelessly to get him to come here to the school and to go down to that sewer plant with me and for me to look him right in the eye and for him to look me right in the eye and have a face-to-face discussion. I wanted to know who this man is, and I wanted him to know who I am. And the only way to do that, really, was to have a face-to-face discussion. So that's what we did. It was a relatively good outcome. We still paid out some money. But I can tell you, relationships are developed better that way than they are in any other fashion. So whatever, after all the arguments are in and done, my encouragement to you in this is find as much face time as possible with the people. Boy, just come to think of it, that's a pretty nice play on words. Not Facebook, but FaceTime. With people will actually get many miles farther than the Facebooking. Parents are your greatest ally. I know I didn't need to tell you that, but just let me underscore it again. Parents are your greatest ally. Now, like I said, I'm not going to focus on school board and so on. They are your ally too. They are there to help you. In my 39 years of teaching school, I have never had a serious problem with the school board, ever. I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that I have found school boards to actually, they understand their job. Their job is to help you. Okay, so I'm not camping there, but right now, parents. Parents are your greatest ally. Here's a suggestion for you. This has been a fault of mine. Make a phone call of commendation only. Have you ever put yourself in a parent's place who has a child that is a difficulty? Maybe it's a learning disabled. Maybe they are lazy. Maybe they're undisciplined. Whatever. Fill in the blank for the problem. Put yourself in that parent's shoes. The phone rings. This is Mr. Lehman. Mr. Lehman is a principal. This is Mr. Lehman. And I've had parents tell me. I get a phone call and my heart just sinks. I just know. Oh, what did Johnny do? Now, what if that was what happened all the time? Every time you got a phone call from the school, it was because something was wrong. Think about what difference it would make if that same parent got a phone call, sometime at least, that just, it had none of that in. It was just, I wanted to tell you today that Johnny, let's not pick on the boys, that Sally would just, it really did well with her math assignment. Just perfect. And I just want to let you know, thank you for your work. Hang up. Even before... Why hang up? You don't want to go to anything else. Of course there are some things that aren't the way they ought to be. So what? Make a phone call that is commendation only. Nothing else. It's not ignoring the truth. It's just back-burnering it. But it is building a relationship. It is letting that parent know I'm on your side. Let me know how I can help you. So I can interact at non-school functions. I know most of you do this. Vitally important. A lot more has been said to me by a parent over after church, and I've shaken their hands and greeted them, and I'm talking there a little bit, and I don't even bring it up, but maybe Sam will say, well, you know, how's so-and-so doing at school? A discussion opens there that goes farther than it would go in a lot of different places. And of course, in our day, of pressed coffees and smoked coffees. And I've lost total track of all the kinds of coffees that exist, but whatever they are, there's all this stuff and places where you can sit down at coffee shops. And have you been to that coffee shop and that coffee shop? Well, no, I haven't, or whatever. It still has become a pretty good forum. So when somebody calls me and said, would you go out for coffee with me? I'm on, because I know this is the place where people talk. So whether I agree with all that pressing and stuff and shoving it all, it matters little. What does matter is that's the place where they'll talk. I'm coming there. You call me for coffee, I'll be there. It might not be so much about the coffee, but it's about the talk. Now, I'll drink the coffee, whether it's pressed, pushed, or shoved, or whatever happened to it. So interact at non-school functions. Third, genuinely express interest in the unique life of patron families. Most families have some kind of uniqueness about them. And it may be something that you care little about, but maybe it's something you ought to care about. I'll never forget a teacher. I know some of you would know this person fairly well. He himself would not be a sportsman. I remember when the report came to me that he did this. I'm like, he did what? Day before hunting season, he had all the boys haul in their guns, bring their guns to school. Now imagine that. They didn't go through any detector system, I suppose. They just brought their guns to school. And I'm like, he did what? Okay. All he was doing, if I told you this person's name, he's a favorite with students. They really like him. Why do they like him? This point here, at least, is one of the reasons. Genuinely expressed interest in the uniqueness of family things. Music, sports stuff, you know, whatever it may be. You start to engage there, and that parent comes on board really fast. When they recognize that you actually have some interest here and you care about it, and you want to know. And incidentally, we're teachers, so we're learners too, right? Maybe we're first and foremost learners. And what I have found out is a lot of times when I begin to engage with that unique thing of that person, of that family or whatever, I begin to learn things that I wouldn't have learned otherwise. It's a shortcut. Secret to teaching, by the way, is to find all the shortcuts you can to learn as much as you can, as quickly as you can. And that's one of the ways to do it. Fourth, create opportunities for parents to share their hearts with you. I already mentioned the coffee, if they like coffee, and other things of that nature. But you create the opportunity for parents to share their hearts with you. As a pastor, I've found that to be very, very helpful. And not only in this scenario, but in other scenarios. Now, these are things I know. They're not news to you. You've heard them before. Please, even if you are a first-year teacher, make a note now that you're going to look at this list once a month. Not because Mr. Lehman or Melvin Lehman created it, but because I just know that if you make some of this work for you, life will go better for you. Whether you're a first-year teacher or a fifth or a tenth, I just know it will. And so I would encourage you to look once a month and just and do one of them. Now, I promise you, it will go miles in actually creating the kind of relationships you want. Now, I want to go to a different subject here. I might just stretch this a little bit, because here's one that has come to the front. CYS, at least in Pennsylvania, is called Children and Youth Services. But all across the land, we have needed to grapple with CYS or its equivalent in some way, shape, or form. And particularly for those of you who are involved in schools that are accepting non-Mennonite students, or maybe even you're in inner city or someplace like that, I know that this is an issue. And it is going to continue to be an issue. It's affected us. It's another of those things that has actually, just by osmosis, just settled in on us. I know I know that you parents do not spank your children as quickly as we used to. Some of it is your own fault, but some of it is a fault of this the culture that has been impressed down upon you. I did hope you hear that first part. Some of it is your fault. Why? I mean, I remember the days when, it has sunk in, and what we almost have become frightened. And I'll say more a little bit about that in a bit. So I thought that I better spend some time here, because this is an issue. First, remember, now we're talking about partnering. Remember that CYS, or its equivalent, is not the source of the problem. They did not create the problems that they have needed to grapple with. I give you a verse here that takes, in my opinion, takes us back to the source and throws it right back on our shoulders. This comes from Malachi 4:6, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers. Very last verse of the Bible, very last line, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. We are living in the generation of this curse. We are living in a fatherless generation. I don't need to expand on that, you know it. Why? I have a question for you. Why are we living in a fatherless generation? Don't intend to preach on divorce and remarriage this morning, but listen, just back, turn the clock back. Go back. Go back in 1920, 1925. If almost anybody in society had gone to a pastor of any church, not a Mennonite church, of any church, and said, "Will you marry me? I have been divorced, and now I want to remarry," they'd have said, "I'm sorry. Justice of the peace, maybe, but I'm not marrying you." 1925. And you hear me right? Almost any church would have said, "No, I'm not doing it." I don't need to tell you how dramatically that has changed. This is not CYS's fault. This is the church's fault. I don't think any of us have been able to actually get hold of the damage that was done when the church opened the doors there. And as they opened the doors, that snowball got rolling in. That thing has never stopped. And it has just gotten worse and worse and worse. Even in 1980, if you had suggested to me that the things that happened in the last 5 years in the United States of America was going to take place, I said, no way in the world. It might happen, I don't know, 2100 or something like that, but surely not in my lifetime. Well, it has. That's the problem. Remember, the CYS is not the cure for the problem. So we're talking about legal authority now and stepping in. They didn't create the problem, and I don't think they're the cure for the problem. In fact, I'm quite sure they're not, as far as that's concerned. But remember, I'm trying to emphasize partnering here. So how do you relate to these people? Well, it's good to remember this. The CYS is responsible to protect the good and punish the evil. And they, according to the scriptures, are given the authority to use coercion to accomplish their mission. I guarantee you that in this audience, there are many, we could have story after story after story about how CYS really is a mess. I understand. Been there. I know something about the interactions there and so forth and so on. But you know, they are here to protect the good and to punish the evil. And remember, if one takes the time to culture a relationship, it makes a difference. You remember the story that I started out with? Now, I left you in the courtroom, right? Where here's the lesbian partner and here's all of this stuff going on. And my question was, who in the world says so here? Who's going to call the shot? I didn't tell you the end of the story. I'm still not prepared to tell you the end of the story, but the continued one is this. On Saturday, Sheila and I intend to travel to Toronto and to the Toronto airport and pick up Shannon and Joella, our son and his wife and their family, because they're moving back home from Poland to actually take Gina into their home as a foster child as time goes along. How in the world did that happen? Come back to the courtroom. I was fascinating how this happened because Shannon needed to, he had flown home specially to go to this, to be at the hearing where much of this was going to be decided. And this is where I'm sitting in the audience and he's there. And so now he's up on the witness stand. Or I guess they call it the witness stand. And he's being questioned. Judge looks at him and he says, his first comment is, I understand you flew home. You flew home from Poland to be at this meeting. Yes, that's right, Your Honor. I can't remember the questions that went on. He asked a few more, and Shannon answered him. Now, you need to remember something before I finish that piece. Over the years, in the 10 years or so, a little less than that, have elapsed between the time that Shannon's had this little girl and now they kept up contact all along with CYS. Now and then checking in with them. How are things going? What are you thinking? Just want you to know that we stand ready to do what we can if the time comes up. And they had names of people and they talked to Sheila and I endlessly about this person and that person, some of them not having a clue and other ones that they thought did. And all this was CYS. But a developing relationship, making sure it's not adversarial. Being careful not to get into those shoes. Back to the courtroom. The opposition to having this girl go into my son's home, the lawyer stands up and says, Your Honor, I have a question for you. These people are Mennonite. Did you know that? And do you know that this little girl probably will be in kind of a different kind of a social and environment and so on. The lawyer even said, no cell phones, no nothing. Well, we have cell phones. Interestingly, that lawyer actually came and apologized to my son later and said, okay, I knew that wasn't true. Here's what astounded me. CYS by this time was said the very best place for this girl is in Shannon and Joella's home. That's where she should be. When the opposing judge got up and said what she had to say, the judge absolutely ignored her. Just didn't pay any attention. So and I sat back there thinking, so you want to raise that? Well, how about if I stood up and raised the issue of here is a woman and here is a woman who are legally married in a lesbian relationship? But I know that would have been political suicide. Don't dare say that. But you know, you could just feel a ripple going throughout the courtroom. So you want to raise a social issue. And there. We'll see what happens, but we're going to Toronto, and we hope by the middle of next week or Thursday that the transition is actually made, and Shannon and Joella are in Chambersburg, and this girl is in her home. Partnering. Partners or adversaries. You did not hear me defending CYS. You do hear me saying, as Christians, can we stop thinking about just being adversaries and all the problems that are associated with, and can we explore the ways in which we can actually engage with our culture and the problems in our culture and do it in such a fashion that we actually are making a difference? That's my point here in all of this. A couple more things. Remember to pay attention to the law. I don't know what the laws are in your land. But now back to schools and teaching here just a bit. My experience, I'm just going to, let me give you the next point here. Remember to be proactive and not reactive. Because I'm out of time here, but I really am out of time. Do you have a written percentage? Just look at these points here and pick up on those a bit. And I'll finish here in just a moment. My experience with CYS is this. They actually will cooperate if you have a plan. But they expect you to have a plan. If you can demonstrate to them clearly that, okay, here's a problem, and here's how we intend to address it. We are going to help this child in this way. We are going to send them to Bald Eagle, or we are going to the various other programs that can actually work. If you have, I have found them to actually say, look, if you've got a plan, we're fine. Because yeah, that's we'll help you there a bit. Not always, but generally that's the deal. Here's what the second thing I have found is, if you can keep them out of CYS's remedial plans, you will be better off. Particularly for a perpetrator. You know how it is in a school. If you find out that somebody, that there's some kind of an abuse, there's requirements here in Pennsylvania at least to report it, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you do that, you have to remember that the person who actually was responsible for creating the problem may end up in the clutches, not of CYS, but other programs, and they have to complete this program and that one. I know of one young man that I was pretty much involved with, and when I actually saw the plan for him, he was a sexual abuser, and there was a 21, 22-year-old lady who was his therapist. And the stuff, the program that he was going through, I said to myself, I will never put a person in those shoes. Now, careful here, Melvin. Those kind of statements are never really all that helpful, but I will tell you that I was frightened, deeply frightened and frustrated with the actual program that they had to fix this person's sexual abuse problem. I really was. So I don't want to be fair and say that there are these kinds of issues. So you can see the notes here, and I'm saying the way to keep them out of there is have your own program. Have a plan. At least here in Pennsylvania, that's the way it works. If you got a plan, they're pretty quick to buy into it if it's reasonable. And if it actually protects the people who are involved. Remember, God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. This circles back to my concern about us being really timid now about actually stepping forward and doing what we need to do. If it calls for a little bit of a spanking, well, then it calls for a little bit of a spanking. I don't think spanking fixes every issue. I'm just telling you, though, that if that's what it calls for, well, then, listen, I am not, by God's grace, I am not going to bow to the culture of this world and the fear that it's going to create for us to actually step up to the plate and do what we know needs to happen. Let's not bow to that fear. But trust God. Maybe we will end up in prison off and on. I don't know. But I would just as well run that risk as to abrogate my responsibility to do what I know needs to happen in whatever case, if I have the responsibility to do so. And I'll finish here on a positive note, I hope. We are partners. But unto you that fear my name, shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. Strong words here now, but and ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. And this is right before the end of the Old Testament. Let us take courage in our day. Let us partner. Let us support one another. Let us love one another. Let us build relationships. And may God give us grace to bring healing to the world in which we live.
Merci beaucoup, Frère Melvin.
Très bien. You speak French too?
Not all French is bad.
No.
We wish you and Shannon's well in the coming week.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.